now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
We're back again.
Yes, we are. Welcome to Shout Out.
Small Town Boys, I chat to writer Tim MacArthur about his new production.
Also, Mark Fabrash from Act Up.
Plus news, views and a few tracks right here on Shout Out. How are we all? Ready to rock and roll? I can't hear you, Terry.
Oh dear, that's a shame.
You're going to have to move mics.
Okay.
Shuffle, right. Shuffle.
Sling your hook. That's the hook.
This mic is more conducive to the other mic.
There we go.
You all need a mic in your life.
Five
don't you?
Is your unlucky number, I've decided, for today.
It's like Mrs. Thatcher said, everyone needs a willy, didn't she?
Did she?
About William Whitelaw, but... But I mean, everyone needs a mic in their life.
Is that the one time she wasn't wrong?
I think, yeah. Okay, there's no comment to be made on that. Although plenty to say.
Absolutely.
God rest her soul. It's a long time ago.
One little bit of news. From October, we're moving time from the live show, that is. So no one needs to panic.
Don't panic.
So on BCFM, Froom FM and Wave, we'll be moving to 8 p.m. Still on Thursday.
That's so close to my bedtime. I'm shooketh.
I know, and it's after the Archers as well, isn't it?
Well, now you'll be able to listen to the Archers.
I listen to the...
Oh, true.
On Radio 4 and then tune into us.
See, that's thinking laterally.
Yeah. I mean, normally I'd be horizontal by 9, but
yeah.
I'll keep going.
And also more news, Gloucestershire Pride, Terry. It looks as though they're in the dip for Euro Pride.
Yes. Yes, they are. In April 2024, it was announced that Pride in Gloucestershire was one of four organisations from across Europe bidding to host Euro Pride in 2027. Now, Euro Pride, if you don't know, I'm sure many people do, is an annual event awarded to a different host city each year that seeks to bring LGBTQ plus people from across Europe together to create awareness and progress on LGBT issues on an international level. Previous hosts have included Vienna, Copenhagen, Malta and Thessaloniki, which is in northern Greece. Euro Pride was last hosted by the UK in London 2012 to coincide with the Olympics. So, if Gloucestershire is successful, we will see a 2-week-long event in August 2027 attracting an estimated 50,000 people from across the UK, Europe and further uphill. Wouldn't that get on the Daily Mail's nerves? Euro Pride 2027 Gloucestershire would feature an opening ceremony in March, a 2-day festival in Gloucestershire Park and a 3-day human rights conference held in neighbouring Cheltenham. It will also include a wide array of cultural and community activities through film, performing arts, still arts, the spoken world, as well as activities promoting healthy bodies and minds taking place across the county. In addition to creating a significant legacy, hear this everyone, especially if you're involved in Gloucestershire council or local politics, it is estimated that if successful, Euro Pride 2027 would bring £35 million into Gloucestershire's economy.
Wonderful.
Worth hosting just for that.
That's staggering.
Yes. That's brilliant. And that's why, if anyone ever says to you, why do you need Pride events? And even if you say, well, even if you don't like them, they bring in a vast sum of money to the city.
The ping
pound. For the outlet, for example, that Bristol Pride get, they bring in at least 100 times more of that money coming back into the city. Mm. So
yeah, incredible. Yeah. Right, we go into our first feature. And I'm off to the theatre to see Small Town Boy. Premiere of Tim MacArthur's Small Town Boys at the Union Theatre is based on a true story, which follows two strangers as they reminisce about growing up as gay men in their hometown of Middlesbrough. The men discover that both dated the same boy at the same time when they were teenagers, unaware of each other's existence. The show explores the journey of the first love and how it's always what it seems. Well, Tim MacArthur, so tell me a little bit more about the play. Not too much that the listeners won't want to put their bums on the seats.
Yeah. first, thanks for having me on. So, yeah, so basically last year I was working at the iconic Ice Palace on Fire Island in the USA. And I was doing my comedy character there, which is called Sister Mary, and which is a tap dancing, singing, musical comedy nun. And basically, I did the show. I had some friends from New York City watching, and we all sort of went out. We had a couple of drinks, and we danced Adonis Summer, took our tops off. Like, the Ice Palace is uber, uber gay. It's an amazing venue, iconic venue. And then after the show, we got talking to this English guy in the bar. And we started, like, you know, chatting. And then I wanted to go and see the moon on the beach, because it's a magical place, Fire Island. Lots of magical things always happen there. And it's got a big heritage with the queer community. You know, lots of people there in the 1920s used to go there to escape so they could be gay or lesbian and, you know, and celebrate their sexuality. And we got talking about lots of different things. And he had just turned 50. I was 48 at the time. And, you know, sometimes when you are, you know, in a different part of the world, you'll meet people. And sometimes, because they're strangers, you will probably confess things more or tell more of your secrets or more of your desires because they're complete strangers. And literally, we discovered we were from the same place, same area in the northeast of England. And then talked about the gay scene in Middlesbrough in the early 90s and reminisced about the venues that we used to go to, like the Paradise Nightclub, the Prince Albert next to Middlesbrough bus station. You know, in that time in the early 90s, you know, Section 28 had been introduced by Thatcher's government. And, you know, the area was very homophobic and it was very challenging being a gay queer person. And then we discovered through reminiscing about who we knew on the gay scene that we both dated the same boy at the same time. And for both of us, you know, like I was 16 and the other guy was 18. And, you know, for both of us, it was the first proper love that we both experienced. You know, my parents were very accepting of me being gay. I came out when I was 15. They were very supportive. This guy's parents were not so much. So it both had an impact on what we wanted. You know, we both wanted, you know, we looked at how much our parents loved each other. And as young gay men, that's what we wanted in our lives. We wanted that love. So when we discovered, you know, that we both dated him at the same time, 30 years later, it sort of really changed our perceptions of what is first love. And as you get older, what you regard, what memories you have of that time. So, of course, for both of us, we, you know, it brought back a lot of memories. And then I went back to New York City to work. And I've written a couple of plays, but I hadn't really been inspired to write anything for a while. But this was the one that I thought, I think I want to write about this. Now, obviously, you know, like, it's based on a true story and there are elements of the play that are true, but there are elements of the play which is there for theatrical license. So I'm leaving the audience to guess which is true and which is not true.
Nice one, Tim. Theatre-wise, you've told us a bit about growing up as a gay person, especially through the Thatcher years. What was your theatre journey like? Were you always into theatre when you were at school?
No, I actually wanted to be a bus driver originally. I know. And then I still love buses. I'm still fascinated by buses. You know, I've got all the Corgi buses and I still have buses, you know, on my shelves at home. Do you know what
well,
I mean?
So if you look over my shoulder, there's a pile of Routemasters in the corner. So
yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it was always a real thing of mine. And my brother actually wanted to be an actor. And so he went to London to be an actor. And then we would go down and see shows. You know, me and my mum would go and see musicals when we went to visit him. And then my friend's granny saw an advert in the Evening Gazette for a production of Oliver. And she said, oh, I think you should do this. You like musicals. So 1987, I did my first musical, Oliver, at Billingham Forum. And then I just had the bug. And then I joined every amateur dramatic society. And we do shows every 6 weeks. And then it was like, goodbye, bus. Hello, acting. And, you know, to be honest, I don't know what pays more.
Well, some of the people we chat to, probably the bus driver, because a lot of people in the theatre do struggle. Sometimes success is slow in coming.
Yeah.
What made you give up this story and share what is probably quite a personal journey? What made you want to share it with the rest of the world?
That's a really good question. I don't know, really. I think it's quite a beautiful story because it is about first love, you know, and all the questions that brings up and sort of, you know, as you mature and as you get old, you know, like I'm going to be 50 in January, you know, a lot of my sort of relationships after him were based on that first experience, you know, and the confidence it gave me to be a gay man, and also the confidence, you know, like to be able to love somebody. I mean, obviously 30 years later we've realized it's not what we thought it was, you know, the amount of money we probably saved in therapy if we had known it was happening. Do you know what I mean? So and I just think it's a really interesting story. And also I think because, you know, the beginning of the play, the first like 30 pages of the play, these two mature gay men are having a really honest conversation about what you learn as a gay man as you get older and what your experiences are and how much what you think, you know, when you first come out that you don't want an open relationship. And then you have all these different relationships with different other gay men with different opinions, different views on their sexuality, different confidence in their sexuality, you know, sometimes dating people that maybe are not really 110% comfortable with their sexuality, and then dating people that are really overconfident with their sexuality, and how much the media, you know, the gay scene is based very much around, you know, a younger gay man and what happens where you fit in, I think, as you get older, or if you want to fit in, do you care even to fit in anymore? And I think that's also really important. You know, so there's lots of things addressed, which feels quite honest and raw, I think, for people come and see it, because I think it'll make people think maybe about their own relationship and their own expectations within a relationship.
Hmm. You said you lost a bit of energy with the writing. Is this energized you? Have you already started to think things in your head that you might put down pen to paper and get on the theatre?
I mean, I've been very lucky, actually, because this is my third play I've had on in a London theatre in the past 12 months. So my other two plays, A Word for Mother, which was on in May for a month at Upstairs at the Gatehouse, was a very serious play about the relationship between three daughters and their mum. And it was very different to, you know, the other plays I've written have been more gay themed, like Control, which was about an abusive older man going out with a younger gay guy. And then Deep and Deeper, which was actually at the Union Theatre last October, where we're doing Small Town Boys this September, was about five gays sharing a flat in London and all the secrets that they all had and who was sleeping with who. And then it was like a play over 20 years. So you saw them really mature from being young to then being older. And it was a black comedy more than anything. Mm. But this, I think, is the most honest piece of theatre that I've written. And obviously, you know, like it's based on a true story. So there is, yeah, you know, that, you know, with all the baby reindeer thing, you know, I've been very sort of careful of what, you know, is true. And, you know, I have said to my fantastic actors, which is Stuart Simons, Nathan Taylor and Don McCharman, at the end, you know, I'll give them the questionnaire. And I'll tell them which is real and which is the fantasy bits within the piece.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So people want to follow you on social media. They want to get tickets. How do they do that?
They go to the Union Theatre. That's a good question, actually. my Instagram is MacArthur.Tim, I believe. I don't know about you, but I'm not very tech savvy with all this, you know, social media, and I should be, you know, like Instagram, I always forget to post. But my Instagram is MacArthur.Tim. I think if people just Google Union Theatre London, or they put Small Town Boys in the Google, but I think it's UnionTheatre.biz, I think, something like that.
I think people will find you. They know you're at the Union Theatre. They got your name now, Tim, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you're right, Tim. People love a true story. And when you look at the streaming service, it's just full of films that are based on true stories.
Yeah.
People like that extra angle of knowing there's humanity and feelings and truth behind it.
Absolutely. And also, I don't know, you know, how, as you know, maybe as gay men, sometimes how honest we are about things in our lives, or, you know, and about open relationships and that dynamic and what that brings, and, you know, whether as human beings we're all supposed to maybe be with several people in our lives, you know what I mean? Or whether, you know, I think it asks a lot of questions. And I personally, for me, I love theatre that makes people think about things. You know, I think it's good to be challenged when one goes to a theatre, because that's what theatre is about, to be stimulated and to think about things and to disagree on subject matter of the play, to have a reaction to something. Yeah. You know, and I think we're sort of losing that a little bit with trigger warnings for things as well. Do you know what I mean? I think it's it's that's what theatre is about. It is to be challenged. It's not to be made comfortable, I think.
Yeah, good point, Tim. Good point.
Yeah.
Tim McArthur, thank you so much for joining us. And I will leave, as I do with other people who come in for a chat, who are in theatre, break a leg.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Yay, Lady Gaga.
You were going to say Radio Gaga then, weren't you?
I was just about to go into song.
But that's what she gets, that's where she got the name from,
yeah,
from the Queen track.
It is.
1984, yeah.
Yeah, right. Are you ready to give us some news?
Oh, always, Staff. This is Shoutout News. Welcome along. The Queer Spirit Festival in the heart of Devon has now taken place for 2024, and the organisers invite constructive feedback from anyone who was there. But they have much more to which to introduce us, as they publicise events for spiritually conscious and LGBTQIA plus people across the UK. Rach Cox, facilitator of the Chakra Rave, would like to let you know about a very special festival that she is part of organising, the Om and Bass Festival in Oxfordshire. Rachel says, when I was started Om and Bass back in 2013, there weren't well-being festivals, only let's damage our liver festivals. I was doing yoga retreats and thinking how expensive they were. Only a few people can go to them. I love festivals and just had one of those eureka moments. I could do a yoga festival where people can choose their classes, do what they like, when they like, and camp over. The community continues to grow and get more diverse, she says. We've got a huge LGBTQ plus crowd, loads of different ages, races and backgrounds every year because of how diverse we've made our lineup. For further information, pop along to the organising website at allthews.omandbass.co.uk. The People's Republic of Stokes Croft reports that Bristol Anti-Racist Action have launched a pledge where individuals and organisations agree to come out in opposition to the far right if they ever attempt to march in Bristol again. You can add your name and share it with others and help build a network of people in the Bristol community opposed to racism and the far right. The Anti-Racist Action preamble reads, on Saturday the 3rd of August, the Bristol community was attacked by racists who aimed to terrorise our city. They were only prevented from attacking refugees housed in the Mercure Hotel by ordinary Bristolians who put themselves in between the racist thugs and the hotel. After this, the far right threatened to return to Bristol on Wednesday the 7th to attack an immigration solicitors in Old Market. Bristol Anti-Racist Action, a grassroots campaign, was started to turn out and oppose them. 7,000 Bristolians came to the streets to defend their city. They add, the thugs that attacked our city are not just against refugees or Muslims. Elsewhere in the country, they have attacked black people and LGBTQ people. They are also anti-trade union and anti-women. Bristol is a diverse city where people of all races, religions, nationalities, sexualities and gender identities are welcome. And our working class has a proud tradition of defending each other, which we will always uphold. BARA has launched this mobilisation pledge on the basis that if the far right threaten to attack any one of us, we all pledge to come out to counter-protest in their defence. Now you can find this pledge and sign it at the BARA website, which you can find through all search engines. Orion Rumler, writing at the 19th, an independent serious online newspaper, says the attacks by Joanne Rowling and other people on sportswoman Imane Khelif show that extremist anti-trans people are now trying to police women's bodies as well as those of effeminate men. Indeed, they are a new fascist threat that wants dominion over all women, especially women who were born women, they say. Rumler writes, really what we're talking about is the spectacle of surveillance of women of colour's bodies, especially when they're winning and performing in ways that exceed the expectations of white women such as Ms. Rowling, says Treva B. Lindsay, a professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Ohio State University. Gender policing or enforcing traditional gender norms and roles through the punishment of those who don't conform ignores the cultural variations, spectrums of self-expression, gender fluidity and non-binary identities, said Tony Newman, director of the Coalition for Justice and Equality across movements such as the National Minority AIDS Council. And these variations are not exclusive to transgender people. Now, attacks levied against trans women are also being used to attack cisgender women, she said. You're policing now not only trans people who transition, but you're policing straight people, Newman said. So, when are we going to start policing masculine women and now also start policing feminine men? Where are we going with this? It should be noted that black feminists have long called out white feminists for their racist tendencies. Ms. Rowling is just the latest. Earlier in the year, Rowling drew the ire of many African-American people for her ill-considered Stevie Wonder jibe at trans women. For more information and for the essay in its entirety, you can visit allthews.19thnews.org. Now, environmental news. Andy Leake, writing in the independent Bristol newspaper D247, reports on a new foraging group promoting food for free and respect for wildlife for LGBTQIA people and allies. Nature Queerdos, co-founded in 2022 by psychologist Jen Atwood and arts facilitator and professional forager Elle O'Connell, was born out of their shared passion for foraging, nature and creating space for queer people. The group offers creative foraging workshops, which include fermentation, sap tapping, safely and sustainably preparing herbal medicines, green woodwork, mindfulness, and collective outdoor cooking. In addition, something rare for a foraging group is that Nature Queerdos have built their events around being wheelchair accessible. Nature Queerdos can be contacted via Instagram or Facebook, and tickets to upcoming workshops can be purchased through Head First. In the immediate future, they will be offering a foraged ink workshop with queer natural ink artist Iona Maria Rodas on Saturday, October the 5th. A number of writers have now publicised the document that right-wing extremists in the US are rallying round, known as Project 2025. Victoria A. Brownworth, writing at Philadelphia Gay News, reports that the plan to eviscerate the Constitution and impose a fundamentalist form of governance on the US has to be seen in the context of hate groups online and the polarisation of political discourse in the US. Victoria reminds us the Civil Liberties Union is reporting that Project 2025 is a federal policy agenda and a blueprint for a radical restructuring of the executive branch, authored and published by former Trump administration officials in partnership with a group called the Heritage Foundation, a long-standing conservative think tank that opposes abortion and reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, immigrants' rights and racial equality. Project 2025's largest publication is a 925 manual for reorganization the entire federal government, but agency through agency, to serve a conservative agenda. Rock music journalist Simon Price, writing in the Guardian newspaper, has little time for the adulation pouring out from some quarters at the news of a money-spinning reunion for the 1990s laddish rock band Oasis. Mr. Price points out, "I'll never forget being present at the Q Awards in 2000 when Liam Gallagher repeatedly heckled Robbie Williams with shouts of queer and Kylie Minogue with lesbian as the assembled music business and media tittered nervously, reluctant to kill the goose that had laid the golden egg. It was one of the ugliest scenes I've ever witnessed, said Price. It wasn't a one-off either, he says. In 2016, on Twitter, Noel Gallagher called Russian football hooligans batty boys, and in 2018 used another homophobic slur, bum chums, against Noel, Johnny Marr and Paul Weller. They've also expressed prehistoric views, complaining about a hip-hop artist, JC, headline in Glastonbury in 2008. We asked our news editor, Terry, where he was during Oasis' first pinnacle of laddish success back in 1995. He replied, I was working for a pirate radio station. Interestingly, all the political stuff that was going on at the time, whether it be Outrage, the Lesbian Avengers, or Reclaim the Streets, was not reflected in Oasis' output. They generally disliked progressive politics of any shade. The aforementioned station I worked for eventually adopted a slogan of guaranteed no blur and no bloody Oasis, which, with the benefit of hindsight, was a bit harsh on Blur, who were the intelligent alternative to Oasis at the time. And finally, Out.com reports that press for Luca Guadagnino's upcoming film Queer is underway as the film has its premiere at the Venice International Film Festival. Queer is one of the most anticipated movies this year, coming from the great Guadagnino and starring Daniel Craig as an American expat in Mexico who falls in love with a younger man, played by Drew Starkey. Based on a novel by William S. Burroughs, the film is said to be the sexiest movie from this director to date. One of the things we learned about the movie is that singer Omar Apollo is not just in the film, but also has a sex scene with Daniel Craig. Now, we know that Craig is taking the movie seriously, as shown by his response when Daniel was asked at a press conference if there could ever be a gay James Bond, since Craig plays gay in several roles across the cinema. Guys, let's be adults in a room for a second, he was answered for. Amen to that. Well, once again, we've had a busy week for LGBTQIA plus issues in the news. We've touched upon some of the stories here, but to keep connected to what is going on, be sure to listen to community radio and TV services in your area. There'll be more next week. In the meantime, for Shout Out News, this has been Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
This is Sade, along with Santana, and we got a bit of a story about Sade right after this.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Why Can't We Live Together, indeed, taking on Timmy Thomas's great hit. Now, Sade is to release her first new song in years as part of a transgender awareness compilation. In these rare days to get new music from Sade, after all, she hasn't released an album since the 2010 Soldier of Love. But in just a few months, she's set to put out her first new song in years. The reclusive singer-songwriter will release Young Lion as part of a trans benefit album arriving on November the 22nd. The project, assembled by non-profit Red Hot, is intended to support transgender awareness and spotlights both trans and non-binary artists. Young Lion is dedicated to Sade's son, Isaac, who identifies as a trans man. Sam Smith's getting involved in that as well. So, yeah, that's quite a nice compilation. I think there's 100 artists going to be supporting that.
Wow.
Put on your Christmas list, isn't it? I think that's going to be something really nice to own.
Yeah.
And Sade is such a fantastic voice.
Mm.
She, as you mentioned, she rarely grants interviews. She rarely talks about her work. But, I mean, in 1984, I remember listening to Sade, you know, on all the pop stations at the time. And what a voice.
Mm.
What a really smooth jazz sound.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Was she the same era as Annie Lennox?
Yes. I mean, the breakthrough year for Sade was 83, 84.
Yeah.
So just slightly later.
A similar tone.
Yeah.
I mean, very unique.
Yeah. Sade is, I think her first name is Helen, and Sade is her Yoruba name. She's half Nigerian, half British, I understand.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Right, exciting. ACT UP. So, Terry, give us a bit of background to ACT UP, because we've got Mark Verbrasch in the studios about to talk about funding.
Yeah.
So just give us a bit of background to ACT UP.
ACT UP is often considered an LGBTQ plus group. It's more than that. It stands for the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. And it was inspired by a speech given by the late, great Larry Kramer, who was an AIDS activist, in 1987 at the New York Gay Community Centre, in which he challenged the population that was experiencing the AIDS crisis to fight back and to fight AIDS as a political issue. And the following week after his speech, ACT UP was formed. It, as a protest group, is extremely influential, not just on LGBTQ plus and feminist politics, but also it's influenced the left, groups such as Occupy, the anti-Rhodes movement of the 1990s, animal rights, all these sorts of things have been influenced by ACT UP and its daredevil tactics, which included shutting down the New York Stock Exchange by invading it and throwing thousands and thousands of fake dollar bills to the floor of the chamber, and lots of things like that. They protested. They weren't afraid to get arrested, because many of the young people involved in 87 and 88 were, you know, had something which at that time was considered deadly and lethal. So, you know, they weren't worried about arrests. They weren't worried about what would happen with the police. But really influential. And there's a great book called From ACT UP to the World Trade Organization, which looks at the heritage and legacy of what is really one of the most important direct action groups of the late 20th century. Mm. Yeah.
Mark, thanks for popping into the studio. Now, there's a threat of the removal of funding, isn't there?
Yes.
Specifically to Brigstow.
Yes, to HIV, kind of, to Bristol City Council are currently looking at how they can save money after the pandemic. And one of the, they've put out a consultation at the moment, which can be filled out and people can have their input. Hint, hint. People can have their input as to like how they think they should save money. But one of the options is that the 100% removal of HIV funding from Bristol, which essentially is an existential threat to Brigstow, the Brigstow Project, which is Bristol's only kind of only service that supports people living with HIV in the city. So that would essentially, like, it would get most of it to close down, apart from certain other little bits. So we're trying to get the word out, talk as much as we can about it, because there's kind of so many other things that come into it, like why Bristol City Council would even propose this as being a fast track city, why they would kind of it. Let's backtrack a little bit, I think. So they need to Bristol City Council need to save £200,000. After kind of saving, after spending money during the pandemic. Bristol City Council currently spends about £80,000 on HIV care, which goes towards funding the core of the advice and support service of Brigstow Project. So they're proposing as one of their options that because there's less people living with HIV than, say, people, adults with learning difficulties, that we should remove the funding from the HIV services and move people living with HIV to be supported by other services. But the thing is, we don't think that's effective. We don't think that people living with HIV should be supported by other services. We don't think their needs are the same. We think it's very kind of very short-sighted, very ill thought out, and also it doesn't save the amount of money. It saves about £80,000 out of £200,000, so there would still need to be cuts elsewhere. So there's all this going on, and meanwhile, in the, one of the things that we kind of try and highlight and talk about is an auditor has found about £1.8 million of Bristol City Council of unaccounted for petty cash. So that's, you know, compared £1.8 million of essentially not necessarily wasted money, but unaccounted for, undocumented money kind of just going out,
wow,
needing to save £200,000. Yeah. Like,
And also, something I was sort of reflecting there when you were sharing that is if they are to remove these services like Brigstow, mm-hmm. The people that are going to these services, especially Brigstow, are going to have to go and find other services. And I think it's going to be quite a very layered impact.
It is.
On each individual, because some people won't go for help. Some people go to the wrong services. Some people go to services and feel unsupported. Some people go to services and it won't meet their needs. Mm-hmm. Whereas it sounds like, from what I understand at the moment, there is a service that is meeting this need that a lot of people, you know, are accessing.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things I think about with HIV is that HIV is essentially... we think of it in the popular imagination. We think about it as like a dirty sex disease. That's kind of how it gets phrased. But really, it's a social disease. If HIV as an illness thrives where there is social inequality, where there is marginalisation, it thrives most in populations which are disadvantaged and in some way by the state. Be it LGBT people. See, you know. Some people would call the AIDS crisis a genocide because of the way it was handled. Yeah. Mm. People of colour, women, trans women, particularly people who use intravenous drugs, therefore people with complex needs, homeless, like unhoused populations, people who don't necessarily have power within the like structure of society and power to kind of influence the state. So historically, again, that's why kind of we over the history of ACT UP have felt the need to kind of step in and band together, and which is why we've been so kind of influential with the work that we've done, because we've had to step together. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot what your question was.
I don't know if it was a question.
Oh, okay.
But basically, great. I was sort of saying, and I feel like, no, I feel like that explains it really well. But I think what I was sharing was sort of going off of what you were explaining, that if they remove what is already accessible, if they take that away,
yes.
Then they're going to make a certain level of care completely inaccessible because it just won't be there for them.
Yes, thank you very much. So yes, it will essentially force people who have had services adapted for them because of different cultural and social factors, force them to like adapt into different services that are designed in different ways when there is already a service that runs really effectively. And really efficiently, that caters to Somali populations, that caters to LGBT people, that has figured out ways to reach out and to allow people in and to integrate people within the service. So,
absolutely, it's also a specialist service. You know, we can all go and speak to our GPs who have a round knowledge base, but it's not specifically there for people living with specific things. Whereas Brigstow is, and I think that brings people to a space where they feel safer and more able to trust the people that they're asking for support.
Yeah, and also we're going to have to come up with more. As people with HIV age, for example, we're going to have to have more specialised care because now people are living longer and longer. We're having elderly people, having to go back into the closet if they're LGBT, but also being refused service or entry into care homes if they are living with HIV because of the lack of exposure of the kind of elderly care industry. Mm. But as that population gets, people living with HIV get older, we're going to have more and more services for this to accommodate. So it's something that's only going to grow in need as time goes on. Yeah. Hopefully will decline in need as we get closer and closer to solving HIV and reducing transmissions like we are. But in the meantime, we still have a cohort of people who need a specific service.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is there an... Sorry, Terry, you carry on.
I was just going to say, and also HIV for the generations that have experienced... the AIDS crisis as well is a very profound social effect. I mean, there are still some older gay men in particular, gay and bi men, who lost an entire cohort of friends, and they need care and support from elderly services as well. So back to what you were saying, Mark.
Mm. Well, we've run completely out of time, but Mark, give us some contact details of website address and also social media so people can follow this, because I know that Brigstow are trying to keep that funding going. So fingers crossed that the council change their mind. But what you're doing is really important to go alongside that in parallel with. So how can people follow that story?
So the best ways to follow us are on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. You can look up ACT UP Bristol. That's capital A, capital C, capital T, low UP, Bristol. Then you can fill out the consultation there. Also, if you want to join us and get involved. We're absolutely kind of open to people joining at the moment, but find us on social media. We're here to say hello, and you can fill out the consultation as well, please.
Mark Fibrash, thank you so much for coming
in.
Thank you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Ooh, transmitter just kicked out there.
I do like a bit of Coldplay.
It did. We just
overmodulated a little.
We did slightly.
I didn't mean to overmodulate.
You did.
To Coldplay.
Yeah, just
on live radio.
Overmodulate.
I don't know what's happened. I feel like I'm
absolutely in Coronation Street all of a sudden.
From Lancashire.
Fascinating. Anyway, what a good show tonight.
Yeah, and hope you liked our outside broadcast as well. Now, if you were with BCFM, we did actually 2 hours, but it was good to be out, wasn't it? And especially in the broadcasting community. From a pub.
Yeah, in the heart of Bristol's Gay Village, yeah.
It was good to be out.
Yeah, and we got some more surprises as well. That's not going to stop there, because we're aiming to do some Christmas stuff and New Year stuff.
Stay tuned.
Out on the streets.
Yeah.
On the streets.
Yeah.
That would be really good.
Your favourite place.
Yeah, I mean, I just like being out. I like shout out.
We're so out.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, to be honest. I mean, New Year's is always lovely, but if we do get to be out, that would be quite a unique experience for me. Because I am old now and I don't go out. I did get invited to hike up the Himalayas the other day by my brother for New Year's. I was like,
wow.
That's a little bit different to what I had in mind, but...
That is an invitation, isn't it? Yeah. That's an invitation.
I think I'll be with Shout Out, don't you?
Well, I hope you are, because I certainly shall be there.
I struggle to climb a flight of stairs. So I feel like
how long have we been doing the New Year show now?
Well, your New Year show, I think, started life on BHBS, wasn't it? It was on Hospital Radio in Bristol. And then it moved to Bradley Stoke Radio and then to BCFM. And you've been doing it about 14-15 years. And I joined you for about the last 6 or 7 of them. Plus Tara, of course, and various guests. We've had a really nice
You'd
time.
You think 5-hour broadcast would like drag a bit, but it doesn't, does it? It goes so like quick. How'd it go, does. Terry? Oh, everyone a winner.
Yes, it does. It goes very fast. And it's incredibly enjoyable, and we always get such good feedback. One year we were in Studio 2 upstairs.
Yes,
which is
I was there for that one.
And we had people waving at us and sort of like...
Asking
for requests.
Yeah.
And last year we broadcast from our Bath studios.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
I mean, sat around in dining room table.
That's the second year we've done that. Second year from the Bath, the Bath studios.
The Bath studios.
And it was a year before that. No, it was 4 years ago that we were here.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Which is incredible, really.
Well, we're talking about New Year, you know, and we haven't even mentioned the
C word either,
thank you. Which we're not going to
mention. I don't like them.
But at carrots time of year, there will be.
I hate carrots.
Hopefully, a few more link ups with local venues. Yeah. That'll be really nice.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, we've got the Halloween show to go before that, of course. So, quite spooky. Terry dresses up. Not saying any more. Out of time already. Don't forget, we're moving our Thursday broadcast to 8 p.m. from October.
Thanks for listening to Shout Out.
We'll be back same time, same channels next week.
So take care all.
Bye.
Bye-bye then. Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.